Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 20, Text Number 7. Shreya Kurvanti Bhutanam. Shreya Kurvanti Bhutanam. Sadabo Dushjajashubi. Sadabo Dushjajashubi. Dadyan Sibi Prabhritaya. Dadyan Sibi Prabhritaya. Kobi Kalpo Daradishu. Kovi Kalpo Doradishu. Shriya Kurvanti Bhutanam. Sadabo Dushjajashubi. Dajan Sibi Prabhritaya. Kovi Kalpo Doradishu. Others? Vaishnavis. Shreya, activities of the utmost importance. Kurvanti, execute. Bhutanam, of the general mass of people. Sadava, the saintly persons. Dushjaja, which are extremely hard to give up. Asubi, by their lives. Dadyan, Maharaj Didichi. Sibi, Maharaj Sibi. Prabhritaya, and similar great personalities. Ka, what? Vikalpa, consideration. Dada Adishu, in giving the land to the Brahmana. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Didichi, Sibi, and many other great personalities were willing to sacrifice even their lives for the benefit of the people in general. This is the evidence of history. So why not give up this insignificant land? What is the serious consideration against it? Of course, this is Bali Maharaj speaking to Sukracharya. Purport. Bali Maharaj was prepared to give everything to Lord Vishnu, and Sukracharya, being a professional priest, might have been anxiously waiting, doubting whether there had been any such instance in history in which one had given everything in charity. Bali Maharaj, however, cited the tangible examples of Maharaj Sibi and Maharaj Didichi, who had given up their lives for the benefit of the general public. Certainly, one has attachment for everything material, especially one's land, but land and other possessions are forcibly taken away at the time of death, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Mrityu Sarva Haras Chaham. The Lord personally appeared to Bali Maharaj to take away everything he had, and thus he was so fortunate that he could see the Lord face to face. Non-devotees, however, cannot see the Lord face to face. To such persons, the Lord appears as death and takes away all their possessions by force. Under the circumstances, why should we not part with our possessions and deliver them to Lord Vishnu for his satisfaction? Sri Chanaka Pandit says in this regard, San nimite varam tyago vinase niyate sati. Chanaka Shloka 36. Since our money and possessions do not last, but will somehow or other be taken away, as long as they are in our possession, it is better to use them for charity to a noble cause. Therefore, Bali Maharaj defied the order of his so-called spiritual master. Tasmai Shri Gurudeva Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So Bali Maharaj is in a conversation here with his spiritual master, Sukracharya, and Sukracharya is trying to talk him out of giving everything in charity to Vamanadeva, and he's bringing up the point that when does anybody give everything in charity? I mean, okay, you can give something in charity, but you know, this is Vishnu. He's going to, if just by you agree to this, keep this promise and give him his three steps, he's going to take everything. You got to get out of this. You know, nobody gives everything in charity. And Bali Maharaj, he's inclined to do it. And he's bringing up, this is his counter argument. He's saying, no, there are examples. There's some Shastric, you know, examples, evidence. These two personalities, they gave everything in charity. They gave their very lives in charity. Like that. And so Bali Maharaj is intelligent. And it was mentioned in two previous classes, first by Gaudachandra, and then I think Amla Bhakta confirmed it, that already by this stage, Bali Maharaj, his motivation for giving everything to Vamanadeva was something more than that, well, I made this promise, I got to keep it. You know, I think they both did mention that he'd already, because of the mercy of Prahlad Maharaj, had already awakened some love for Krishna. And, you know, so he was already kind of like in the know about what was going on, and he was willing to do it. So, is that correct? Okay, that is correct. I heard that, you know, as I said, in those two classes, I haven't had a chance to really carefully reread those sections. So, you know, he was an intelligent man, Bali Maharaj. He was an intelligent man. He was thinking, well, first of all, it's not mine in the first place. You know, and just because somebody's, he's a devotee, he's a pure devotee, he's a Mahajan, but he's born in a demon family. But even, you know, the people, the Asuras, understand certain things about life. They don't necessarily always act on it, but at least they have the intellectual understanding. And anybody can understand, what we're thinking is our property. It's not our property in the first place. And certainly Bali Maharaj was understanding that. You know, I just got this recently from Indra. It's not mine. I mean, it's not my property. It's Vishnu's property. And I'm going to have to give it up, you know, sooner or later anyway. So let me do it now. You know, when I leave the body, I have to give it. Let me do it now and get some benefit out of it, you know. I mean, he was experiencing some benefit on the material level, you know, possessing it and enjoying it at that particular point in time. But as I said, being fortunate, being blessed, you know, having received the mercy of his grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj, had his higher consciousness has been awakened. He was able to understand the bigger picture. And he could understand that, yeah, look, I could weasel out of this promise. I probably could do it. Well, he couldn't really because it was Vishnu, but he might have been thinking, I could weasel out of this promise and I'll get away with it maybe. And I can enjoy this material possessions for some period of time for the rest of my life. But why should I do that? You know, why don't I give it now, you know, nicely to Vishnu, and in this way I'll elevate myself. I make so much progress in my spiritual life. You see? So, you know, perhaps he was thinking like that. That might have been part of his motivation. And also maybe wanting to keep that promise, but you know, I think also he was understanding that, and that was very intelligent. So notice he was thinking, not only is it not a bad idea to give everything to Vishnu, right? Certainly a pure devotee is thinking like this, but it's the only good idea. See? Not only is it not a bad idea, it's the only good idea to give to try to give everything to Krishna. And that's supported all throughout the Vedic literatures, right? I mean, and there's many different levels of reasons. And I'll start at the lower level. I'll present one, I'll quote one verse, two verses from the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, Jagnartat kamano nyatra loko yam kamabandana tadartam karmakuntaya mukta sangha samachara. That work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work binds one to this material nature. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duty for his satisfaction, meaning Krishna's talking about himself there, and this way you remain unattached and free from bondage. See? So the idea there is this, that any work you do that's not as a sacrifice for Vishnu binds you to this material nature. There's a reaction, either pious or sinful. And at the moment of death, at the time of death, if you have any reactions pending, pious or sinful, you have to come back. You have to accept another material body. You have to stay here in this material world, you see? So that's why it's all work has to be done as a sacrifice for Vishnu. In some lecture, Papa talked about, you know, Panchasuno. I can't remember. There's a Sanskrit verse there, but it talks about, you know, even if unintentionally, you know, when we're committing sinful activities all the time, somebody might think, well, I don't want to be, I'm not interested in being, you know, sacrificing to Vishnu, but I'm not going to be sinful. I'm going to be very careful not to be sinful. No, you can't avoid being sinful. That's the point. If you're here in this material world, you cannot avoid being sinful. The only way you can become free from sinful reactions is if you surrender to Krishna. And the example given by Prabhupada in this lecture was that when you're walking, you're stepping on so many little living entities, killing so many ants, or when you light a fire, when you grind spices, when you boil water, when you breathe. There's this microbic organisms all over the place. You're killing them. Inadvertently, we're killing. And somebody who's not Jagnartat Kamanonya Trat, somebody who's not working for the satisfaction of Vishnu, they are accountable for all, they get reactions for all those things. You see? So it's impossible. It's impossible. So that's the first good reason to try to, you know, do everything for Vishnu, because it's the only way to become free from reactions to sinful activities. You see? And then Krishna elaborates. The next point, the very next verse, it goes, Sahajagya Prajashrishva Purovacha Prajapati Ananya Prasavishyadvam Eshavost Istakamaduk. And let me get the translation. I don't want to mess up the translation on that one, so I'll get it. When I learn my verses, I learned this. I place more importance on the Sanskrit than the English, and consequently, some of the verses I know the Sanskrit, and I don't know the English even. But, so, here's the translation for that one. It says, in the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods along with sacrifices for Vishnu and blessed them by saying, be thou happy by this sacrifice, Jagya sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. So now the point there is that the whole material creation is meant for this purpose. To enable the living entities, to give the living entities an opportunity to perform sacrifice. Because it's not only that by performing this sacrifice that you're free from reactions to your activities, which, you know, you are, and that's good, But it's a bigger thing. There's a bigger picture, a bigger plan or idea behind this. The whole, you know, Krishna wants all the parts and parcels who have come here to this material world to, he's trying to re-educate everybody. This whole material world is like, you know, going back to school. It's an educational course. And the lesson he's trying to teach us is, hey, you know, I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You're my parts and parcels. And, you know, you're here in the spiritual world with me, and we were engaging in, like, nice exchanges of love and affection and like that. But, you know, some of you didn't want to do that, and you've come here to the material world. It's actually a mistake. And anyway, I've made this whole arrangement. This is all an arrangement by Krishna so that we can learn that the only way we're really going to be happy is if we're willing to, you know, offer things to Krishna in love and devotion. You see? So this whole material world is just an opportunity, you know, for us to learn that and really nothing else. You know, that's the essence of the whole thing. And like, for instance, further on in this chapter, Prabhupada says something interesting in the purport. In the purport, he says, he's talking about, it's actually funny, it appears in this verse, you know, Krishna's talking about lust, but here in the second paragraph of that purport, Prabhupada says, the Supreme Personality of God had expanded himself into many for his ever-increasing spiritual bliss. And the living entities are parts and parcels of this spiritual bliss. And then he goes on to say, they also have partial independence, and by misuse of that independence, when the service attitude is transformed into the propensity for sense enjoyment, they come under the sway of lust. This material creation is created by the Lord to give facility to the conditioned souls to fulfill their lustful propensities, although that's not really what ideally what Krishna wants to see us doing here, trying to fulfill our lustful propensities. And when completely baffled by prolonged lustful activities, the living entities begin to inquire about their real position. And so there used to be a song, it's a long road to Tripuraria or something like that. So, you know, that's the beginning, you know. But then ultimately we're supposed to come to that point of understanding, no, I have to try to, you know, offer things to Krishna, love Krishna back. You see? There's, going back to the earlier part of this purport, it says, Krishna expands himself into many for his ever-increasing spiritual bliss. So what is that ever-increasing spiritual bliss? You know, what is that ever-increasing spiritual bliss that Krishna's expanded in himself into many to experience? Okay, that's here. That's mentioned here in the purport to the very famous verse, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam. Everybody knows that verse. Everyone offers me with love and devotion, a leaf, fruit, flower, water, I accept. So in the purport to that verse, Prabhupada says, he's referring to Krishna, he says, He is not in need of anything from anyone because he is self-sufficient. See, so Krishna doesn't need to expand himself into many, right? He's self-sufficient. So yet, he accepts the offering of his devotee in an exchange of love and affection. That's it. That's Krishna's ever-expanding spiritual bliss. You see? Krishna's ever-expanding spiritual bliss. You know, Krishna's not interested in just, you know, sitting on the sofa and just kind of blissing out. No, Krishna's ever-expanding spiritual bliss is engaging in these exchanges of love and affection with devotees. That's Krishna's ever-expanding spiritual bliss. You see? And that's the whole purpose for why this is the real purpose why Krishna even creates this material world. You know, this is all an arrangement to give the conditioned souls, so the fallen souls, we're fallen souls, you know, an opportunity to, you know, once again, come to this platform of being willing, agreeable, and, you know, ready and willing to engage in these exchanges of love and affection with Krishna. You see? And,
so that's what it's all about.
And, you know, Bali Maharaj has understood this. You know, basically, he's understood this already, and that's why he's willing. He's not stupid. He understands what could be, you know, what's about to happen. Possibly, he's going to lose everything, but he's got that confidence. And no, this is Vishnu. The whole idea is to, you know, give everything to Vishnu, reawaken my dormant love for Vishnu, become a pure devotee of Vishnu, and I'll do it. And whatever happened, let whatever come may, you know, he's ready. And you know, and it goes a little bit south, you know, to start off with. But then ultimately, Krishna doesn't disappoint him, and he rewards him materially and much more significantly spiritually, because he agrees to, you know, be his doorkeeper in Sutala. And so, you know, he's there. He's going to have that ongoing relationship with him. He gives him his association, which is the most valuable thing. That's the highest perfection. There's one nice purport here in chapter 9, again, actually, a little bit earlier. Right. Well, I'm not going to try to search. But Papa mentions that this getting Krishna's association, that's the highest perfection. You see? So he got the highest thing. You know, he got Krishna's association. Krishna was willing to be there as his doorkeeper. You know, Swarup City. He achieved that perfection of his constitutional position. You know, he was awarded that, you know, that pure devotional service, that relationship with Krishna. So, anyway, this is the main point I wanted to make. I thought, I was thinking about this the other day, and I just thought, wow, I felt like I actually maybe had like a realization. This phrase came in my mind, just love Krishna back. You know, in other words, Krishna's already, it's from these things I read, it's obvious, Krishna's already loving us. You know, that's where he loves all the parts and parcels. That's why he expands in the first place as the, you know, as the jivas, as the vibhinam, with vibhinam's expansions. And if you read between the lines, that's like the whole Bhagavad Gita is saying that, you know, Krishna is saying that throughout the whole Bhagavad Gita. What's the meaning of that verse? Manmana bhava mad bhakto majaji mam namaskaru mami vaishasi sacham te pratijane priyosi. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your obeisance to me. Thus you will come to me without fail, I promise you. He's saying in so many words, look, I love you, you know, I mean, you're my parts and parcels. You know, in the 15th chapter, Krishna says, Mamai Vamsa, Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhutsa. All the living entities are my eternally fragmental parts and parcels. And Krishna said, okay, you know, look, I love you. But just, come on, love me back. Just love me back. That's the whole thing. You see? And that's what Krishna's asking throughout the whole Bhagavad Gita. So, that's what it's all about. That's what Bali Maharaj is, he's understood that. And we've understood that. That's why we're here. Sometimes we forget it. Even though we're right here, sometimes we forget it. But that's really what this is all about. That's what life's all about. That is the secret of life. That is the secret of life. The secret of life is to be ready and willing to love Krishna back. That's really what it is. And we're so fortunate because, you know, we've taken shelter of somebody who already knew how to love Krishna, was loving Krishna back, Srila Prabhupada. And exactly what we're doing here is exactly the best thing that any human being could be doing. You see? Because, you know, somebody might say, okay, I'm willing to love Krishna back. So what do I do? Exactly what we're doing. You know, I mean, in this one particular verse, Krishna talks about offering him a leaf, fruit, flower, or water. And that's good, you know. But then it's basically, that's just, he's talking about devotional service in general. And you know, here it is. What Prabhupada has given us, this is perfect. It's actually perfection. You know, Prabhupada has understood exactly this point. You know, that the whole idea, the whole point thing is that for these jivas, these fallen souls, to love Krishna back and become, once again, nityasiddhas, liberated souls. And this is, and I'm going to give them exactly what they need to know, and exactly, I'm going to tell them exactly what they need to do in order to best facilitate that, to make them, you know, the most rapid progress towards achieving that objective. And that's what we have here. You know, everything we're doing is specifically designed for that purpose, to help us, you know, make the best possible progress towards reawakening our dormant love for Krishna. Get rising early, coming to Mangal Arati, worshipping, you know, Srimati Tulsi Devi, chanting japa, everything. Exactly what we're doing here, this is exactly the perfect process. You see? So, so we're very fortunate. We should remind ourselves, you know, that of our good fortune, practice very seriously, you know, with a lot of confidence that this is it. There's nothing more I need to do. You know, I'm in the right place at the right time, doing the right thing. Now let me just plug in, I just got to really dig in. Let me do this with full enthusiasm. That's what Rupa Goswami says. Utsaha nishchayat dayat tat tat kumbhavat. Enthusiasm, conviction. Got to do it. Let me do this full on. Let me make sure every day I'm there on time for Mangalarati, that I chant and dance, that I really, you know, stay awake during japa. I really try to hear it, that I'm paying attention in the Bhagavatam, you know, et cetera. But do everything with the confidence that by really surrendering to these activities, I'm going to advance. I'm going to get purified. I'm going to make progress towards achieving that highest perfection of life, you know, which is Krishna Prem. Krishna Prem. And let's see, what time is it? 8:05? Okay, I'm just going to read this first paragraph of the purport to this verse, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam. If one offers me with love and devotion, a leaf, fruit, flower, water, I'll accept, because it's an amazing paragraph. And you know, I don't know how many years it's been since I read this paragraph. I don't know why I didn't read this paragraph, but I just read it this morning when I was thinking about this, and I just thought, wow, this is like amazing. I'll read it to you. Prabhupada says, for the intelligent person, it is essential to be in Krishna consciousness, engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord in order to achieve a permanent, blissful abode for eternal happiness. The process of achieving such a marvelous result, isn't that nice? A marvelous result. It's a marvelous result. The process of achieving such a marvelous result is very easy and can be attempted even by the poorest of the poor, without any kind of qualification. That is wonderful. You could be the poorest of the poor without any kind of qualification, and still you could achieve this marvelous result of what? Of achieving a permanent blissful abode of eternal happiness. We're trying to offer people something really wonderful, you know, marvelous. Prabhupada, now read on. The only qualification required in this connection is to be a pure devotee of the Lord. It does not matter what one is or where one is situated. The process is so easy that even a leaf or a little water or fruit can be offered to the Supreme Lord in genuine love, and the Lord will be pleased to accept it. No one, therefore, can be barred from Krishna consciousness because it is so easy and universal. Here's a beauty. Who is such a fool? Prabhupada goes, who is such a fool that he does not want to be Krishna conscious by this simple method and thus attain the highest perfectional life of eternity, bliss, and knowledge? That's a pretty far out sentence. Krishna wants only loving service and nothing more. Krishna accepts... There it is. Krishna wants only loving service and nothing more. Boom. Prabhupada, in one sentence, he says it right there. It's clear. Krishna wants only loving service and nothing more. He doesn't ask for, if one offers me gold, silver, diamonds, and platinum with love and devotion, I accept. He doesn't say that. He couldn't care less. As I already read, it says, you know, Krishna, he owns everything already. It's all his property already. He just wants the love and devotion. You know, it's not like, well, you know, I want the love and devotion, but as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I got a pretty big overhead. You know, it wouldn't hurt if you give me a little gold, silver, diamonds, and platinum. I wouldn't mind that, and love and devotion. No, he's not. Just love and devotion. That's all he's interested in. Anyway, let me finish this paragraph. Krishna wants only love and devotion, loving service, and nothing more. Krishna accepts even a little flower from his pure devotee. He does not want any kind of offering from a non-devotee. He is not in need of anything from anyone because he is self-sufficient, and yet he accepts the offering of his devotee in an exchange of love and affection. So that's what Krishna's interested in. He's interested in an offering from a devotee in an exchange of love and affection. That's the whole picture right there. And to develop Krishna consciousness is the highest perfection of life. So that's another... Every sentence is important. You know, Prabhupada's books are meant to be read, yeah, but beyond being read, Prabhupada's books are meant to be meditated upon, you know. Practically, as you go on, you'll see this. You could take, I don't want to say any sentence, but this, at least my experience is this. I've been reading Bhagavad Gita for 42 years now, you know. But still, you can read something, and then you just think about it, and just like, it's like... I think it says it someplace in one of the purports. You get like a new realization about it as you just read it and you think about it and you, wow, I know I read this, but this never occurred to me, but just like I said, if this is to develop Krishna consciousness, the highest perfection of life. See, so just what we've just been hearing, you know, up to this point in the purport, that's it. There's nothing beyond that. You don't have to do anything more than, other than, or more than just what we're trying to do here and what Prabhupada has told us to do here. Try to become pure devotees of Krishna. Bhakti is mentioned twice in this verse in order to declare more emphatically that bhakti, or devotional service, is the only means to approach Krishna. No other conditions, such as becoming a brahmana, a learned scholar, a very rich man, or a great philosopher, can induce Krishna to accept some offering. Yeah, so the gopis are, you know, a great example of that. The gopis, Prabhupada said, they were just cowherd girls. You know, they didn't know the Vedas. They weren't like high in a social position. They, you know, materially they didn't have a lot going for them, but they were. Their glory was they were like pure lovers of Krishna. So they weren't Brahmins, they weren't scholars, they weren't very rich, they weren't philosophers, but you know, they were able to induce Krishna to accept it because they had love. And so that's the most important thing. You know, don't worry about the material stuff. And you go, oh, I'm too stupid to really become an advanced devotee. No, you're not. There's no question of intelligent, stupid, rich, poor, healthy, unhealthy. There's no material there's no material qualification that'll help you, you know, become a pure devotee of Krishna, and there's no material disqualification that will prevent you from becoming a pure devotee of Krishna. That's what's meant by ahoitiki apityata, right? Unmotivated, you know, there's no material thing that can stop somebody. It's your desire. You know. Anyway, let me finish. Without the basic principle of bhakti, nothing can induce the Lord to agree to accept anything from anyone. That's all. In other words, once again, Prabhupada's making the same point. He's just saying it in so many different words. Krishna's only interested in the devotional service. He's only interested in that exchange of devotional love and affection. Without devotional service, without bhakti, nothing can induce Krishna to agree to accept anything from anyone. Bhakti is never causal. The process is eternal. It is direct action in the service of the Absolute Whole. So I'll just stop there, about 10 past 8. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yeah, Sacha Northrup. Yeah. Well, so try to renounce.
I repeat that again. So that
try to renounce. You want to repeat it? Because you got the mic.
Since everything belongs to Krishna, nothing belongs to us, and everything is about renouncing or giving up, what will be that thing that we need to renounce to get connected with Krishna? Reconnect.
Okay. Where everything belongs to Krishna, that means both gross material energy belongs to Krishna and also the subtle material energy, you know. There's bhumirapa nalo vayu kam mano buddha evacha. Okay, so I would say if you're going to renounce one thing, renounce that your causeless unwillingness to serve Krishna, to surrender to Krishna. That's what we have to renounce. And if you renounce that, then you got a clear field ahead of you. Which is the living entity, the jiva, just has to renounce that unwillingness, that stubbornness, that I'm not going to surrender to Krishna, I'm not going to serve Krishna, if that's possible.
I was thinking about sense gratification. That's good.
Well, yeah, that's kind of like, you know, a downline from that. If you give up that unwillingness to serve Krishna, you become willing to serve Krishna, then you're going to give up sense gratification. Because sense gratification is just going to seem like, you know, stale bread and water compared to what you're experiencing. Just like in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Vishayava nivartante nahahara shadehina rasavarjama sopyasha padam jishtavartate, that the embodied soul may be restricted from sense gratification, but the taste remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, one becomes fixed in consciousness. So, you know, when somebody comes to Krishna consciousness and gives up that causeless unwillingness to serve, becomes willing to serve and surrender, then you get a higher taste. Krishna satisfies you in different ways, and then the sense gratification becomes less and less and less and less important until gradually it just fades into oblivion. things that, you know, when you came 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, you were just kind of like thinking, how am I going to give that up? And when you first tried to give it up, it was kind of like, it's really tough to get, you know. But then just as time goes on, it just kind of fades into oblivion, and you look back on it and you think, man, was I really ever attached to that in the first place? Or I can't believe I was attached to that. That's how it works. It could happen like that, because Krishna's in control. Krishna can make it happen practically instantaneously, or he could just have it, you know, happen over a period of time. But that's what happens. You become, you know, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janiyati Ashuvai Ragyam Janam Chiyadahoitakanda. By engaging in devotional service to Krishna, one automatically develops causeless knowledge and detachment. It's a byproduct, you see? So you can't put the cart before the horse. Keep the horse before the cart. We have to, focus, concentrate, just trying to become a devotee of Krishna, and then all these other stuff, everything else will fall in place. Like I had one lady right after I gave Sunday feast lecture yesterday, and some lady came up to me just after the class, and she said, she's almost in tears, she said, I've been trying, but I have a problem, like I'm finding it very hard to follow one of those rules and regulations. I said, well, okay, which one? She said, meat eating, I said, meat eating? She said, yeah. I said, I'm trying to be a vegetarian, but I keep stumbling, and I kind of find it hard. I said, well, how many times have you come here? She said, twice. I said, oh, just keep coming. Don't worry, I said, I told her, you're putting the cart before the horse. The way it works is that it's not like you have to give up all your bad habits and then you become a devotee. No, just first become a devotee and you'll be able to give up all your bad habits. Rupa Goswami says, yena tena prakarena manak Krishna nivasayat, that in the beginning, one has to somehow or another attach the mind to Krishna. And then the ability to follow all the rules and regulations will follow. See, that's our process. So to start off with, we want to encourage people, come, chant, take prasadam, associate with the devotees, and, try to give up and you'll be able to. Krishna will give you the strength. Krishna will give you the mercy, to be able to do what you have to do. See? Krishna is Dhyampati. He's the Lord of Intelligence. He's, the whole thing. What people experience, it's all controlled by Krishna. Savashishaham Radhisani Vishto Matak Smritir Gyanam Apohanam Cha. I am seated in everyone's heart. For me comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. Anyway, I don't want to go on too much. But the idea is if you just try to become a devotee of Krishna, then Krishna, he's in control. And he's going to help you. He's going to give you the intelligence, the enlightenment to understand what to remain attracted to and what not to be attracted to. He helps like that. So you just have to try to become a devotee and everything else follows. Everything else will fall in place. Anybody else have any question or comment? Thank you very much. Gunta Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.